you know, it's a grim, dark future and past there. So there's going to be a lot of cool elements, I think, from that.
Awesome. I am really excited to see how this goes.
Well met, adventurers. My name is Lee.
I'm Joe, and welcome to Mage Productions. So tonight, it is going to be just me. Lee has been trying to have this conversation with us, but his internet is not cooperating. So I get the pleasure of speaking to Ben, the DM of Murder Dice Volume 2. Ben, how's it going?
Good. I was a little early there, but I'm excited to be here, obviously.
Hey, it's better than like super delay we've been getting from Lee when we were trying to talk, so...
Yeah, exactly.
It's cool. It works.
It was you and me and Lee like 5 seconds behind, so...
So, Murder Dice has hit volume 2.
Yeah. We had a pretty long, I think 2.5 years or close to 3 years. Mm-hmm. We had the first one going, and Mike approached me at the end of it. And he's like, Ben, you do a lot of DMing. I want to play this game as opposed to doing all of the work. I'm like, that sounds fair.
I mean, I can understand that. At least it seems like he put an absolute ton of work into volume 1.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he, I really didn't know, David and Mike go way back, and Kyle mm-hmm. a little bit further, but I was just coworkers with David, and they had some people drop out right at the end of this campaign, and he was like, Ben, you like Dungeons & Dragons, you want to come play at my friend's house? And I was like, sure. that's how this all started. So, you know, a lesson in being up for fun stuff.
There you go.
But they had been playing for years, and I just caught the back end, and I was like, this is awesome. And then the podcast spun out of, you know, hey, we're going to do another campaign. You know, let's record this one and do a mm-hmm. podcast. It wasn't really any kind of grand expedition, you know, it was just, you know, we might as well have a catalog and do this kind of stuff. And then the reaction's been great. So thought we'd go around to volume 2.
So, volume 2, we are in an entirely new world.
Entirely new world. It's a setting that I've run a few other campaigns in, mm-hmm. although just to differentiate it, because Christina, one of the players, she played in the other campaign, and I didn't want there to be too much kind of carryover besides kind of just the world building. Mm-hmm. So, it's a different continent in the world, and then... it's kind of 100 or so years in the future of when they played. And so it's right at the time period of kind of when you're starting to get like black powder rifles, printing presses, things like that. You're starting to have a little bit more technological advancement, kind of renaissance. Well, not Renaissance era, but, you know, a renaissance of technology.
Sure.
So there's some cool stuff going on. In the last game, there was a big thing about, you know, these wizards and dragons doing cool stuff. And in the new campaign, that's going on in another continent, but they are having this huge conflict, this war vying for power, and it's causing these huge amounts of refugees to come over to this new land. So you kind of have this... this plains area that is all of these refugees from another continent, and there's some people already living there. So it's kind of this very manifest destiny, early American, you know, settlers kind of area, is kind of where the initial part of the campaign's headed. They started kind of in more of these northlands that we touched on, which is sort of like German, Russian kind of mountainous areas. And very kind of dark, very grim, very hard, kind of scattered home style or farm style life there. So, nice. And then we got a few other cool, interesting places, I hope. I actually, for this campaign, I'm very much a minutia kind of guy. I get down mm-hmm. into, you know, what kind of wagon wheels, I did like a whole research on the era of like gunpowder and the technological advances and stuff, kind of placing the time period. And I have a friend who's like, but what if like there were 8 different kinds of dragonborn and they all had these cool things and they had all these kind of magics? And you know, he's a very big picture adventurer, fanciful kind of guy. And so he's actually helping me write some of the stuff, some of the kind of grandiose background. So that's been cool to collaborate with someone who isn't immediately going to go in and play the game with me. It's like, I'm always feel like I have to hold stuff on, like I have to dose out the secrets so they don't, you know, I don't ruin everything. So.
So is this world a homebrew world? Have you taken some setting and kind of adapted it?
So it's the world is Kiatom. It's a world of my own design, although I rely heavily on historical examples, you know, similar to Game of Thrones is the War of the Roses. You know, I've got a lot of different areas that are kind of timepieces. So, you know, the kind of Manifest Destiny Americana area, there's an area that is inspired by the uniting of the Japanese islands and clans. The Nobunaga era and a few different kind of other periods in history. So it's not like, you know, static this time in the world, but, you know, it draws on kind of realistic things. Because I personally find it interesting to kind of, you know, delve into the historical examples and just kind of things that have happened.
So I remember from the epilogue episode from volume one, Mike was talking about, you know, trying to get things into the game that would really interest all of the players. And when he came around to you, he was like, it's all about political intrigue.
Yeah.
And the description of your world there absolutely screams that. That is awesome. It sounds like you have so many things going on in there.
Yeah. There's a lot of, and you know, it's one of those things where I spent a long time creating this, you know, I had several months before the end where I knew I was going to be doing this. And then, you know, the first couple episodes get in and I'm suddenly realizing it's like, oh man, because I used to DM for like 10 hour stretches at a time. I'm used to having these long days. I mean, some of them would go 12 hours with friends, you know, because we wouldn't play all the time. And so now it's like we sit down at the end of the night, you know, we start recording at 8 o'clock and suddenly we have just 4 hours to get three episodes out. And it's like, I do not have the amount of time to really describe the local politics of the countryside that you're going through. Which, given to most people, isn't all that interesting. So, you know, it's the first couple episodes are a lot of minutia. And then I think we're starting to kind of get more into the quicker pace thing, which is an adjustment for my DM style for sure.
So how have you kind of found the adjustment from DMing, like you said, just kind of sitting down playing to actually DMing for entertainment and for that story for people to listen to? Have you seen a big difference with that? Is it something that you're adjusting to?
Yeah, I mean, even just the having to stop and parcel out stuff, you know, when you're instead of thinking of like one big 6 hour arc, you know, you're now having to do these little 1.5 hour kind of and then get trimmed down to 1 hour arcs. You're having to really think about stopping points a lot more, which is an interesting challenge that, you know, you wouldn't think of until you sit down and do it, you know, because, you know, listening back, I wasn't all that happy with our third episode because, you know, some interesting dialogue happened between the characters, but not all that much happened. You know, I kind of akin to it when I was talking to some other people as like a shopping episode on some podcast where it's like, that's all they really did. You know, I hope it's more interesting than them haggling over a sword, but, you know, it's trying to keep in mind. It's like, you know, and even just going back and editing it, trimming things down and going, okay, we've discussed this enough. Let's move on to the next thing. And I think, you know, you can listen to our early episodes and I think most podcasts, you know, the first three episodes are usually kind of laying the groundwork, getting into it, introducing the characters is half an episode. So, you know, so, I mean, it's a lot of interesting challenges, but I think not only with doing it more and getting more experience doing it, we have a Patreon up where a lot of the rewards are people getting to kind of do stuff in the story, have characters, have items, have some influence. There's a tier for killing a player, and just like a lot of it on the surface is kind of like small stuff. But like when people send me a name, I'm like, oh, you know, what do you envision this character like? And they'll describe it, and they have, you know, it's like a like a real character someone would play. And I'm like, oh, that gives me all these ideas for this kind of story. So, I mean, it's that alone is helping me flesh out a lot of cool stuff. And I think that'll help kind of keep the interest and keep the pacing a little bit. So, or at least I hope.
Very nice. So we've got four all new murderers. How are they coming together? How's that team chemistry going so far?
So, I you know, we had a really weird start because we had a date set to play. And then as we were like, I think the day before or something like that, we were going there. David and his wife had their baby. And suddenly he was like, hey, I'm not going to make it. And then Mike was like, hey, I don't want my character to start with a party like we planned. I want my character to start in jail. I'm like, okay, so the first episode is two people when I did not plan that. So, you know, things were in motion for those three episodes. But, you know, there was a good dynamic, I think, between Bastion, the Dragoon, played by Christina, and Cassius. He's going to hate me that I said that.
Okay.
Cassius, the Paladin, played by Kyle. You know, they had a good kind of... you know, you're always worried when you put two players together that they're just going to be like want nothing to do with each other and not talk. And they weren't like that, which was good. And then you add in this guy, they spring from prison and they do this thing. And, you know, it had a, you know, there was a really good banter right off the bat. So I couldn't be more happy with that. And then with our new episodes that are dropping, I can't remember if he's in it now, but probably by the time this goes up, Brain, David's character, will be in, who he actually played on a one-off a long time ago, which the audio quality for that is terrible. It was done in like an actual echoey dining room. And so I'm excited because he was like, oh, I have to make a new character. People aren't going to like it if I play that character. I'm like, no, I will be mad at you if you don't bring that character back. I loved it.
Brain is so awesome.
Yeah, he's probably easily one of my top five like play characters people have played in my games. So, you know, I think once we get really into the meat of the adventure, it's going to be a great crew. And, you know, we have a dichotomy of not really anybody super good. You know, our paladin is not like a lawful good things need to be right paladin, all the way down to, you know, a skeevy kind of tiefling. So I think they'll kind of get into some fun shenanigans. I'm excited to see how it plays out.
Oh, I bet. How's Kyle adjusting to playing a paladin?
You know, it's a vengeance paladin, so it's it's basically Darius with some more killing power.
It's just amusing. I'm almost through the second episode, and listening to him is interesting because it's I don't even know how to describe him trying to play a paladin.
You know, the thing is that, you know, I'm really happy that he chose to do a character voice. We got on him a lot about that. So, so big kudos to him. And I like the character voice, and he's got such a friendly demeanor, and he's a lot more of like a face character now. You know, watching Kyle progress from like when I first played with him, not on the podcast, to now, like the role playing has become such a bigger thing because I think he himself told me I get a lot more enjoyment out of it now. Whereas like when he first played the game, it was very much I want to kill things, which is still, you know, he still wants to do. I'll give him plenty of stuff to kill.
Sure.
But I think he sees a lot more of the fun and value himself in the role playing, which I hope to foster more of with everybody, because I think it's a really it's one of the quintessential parts of the game. You know, the combat's basically a board game where you get a little bit more color. But, you know, the role playing's really, I think, where a lot of the fun stuff comes out.
It's just really interesting listening to what you expect to be Darius as this like bubbly, happy sounding guy. You're like, no, yeah. This is wrong. I've got to say though, when y'all came across Mike's character, or when they, since you're running it now, came across Mike's character in the prison, oh, I half wanted Mike to just be like, no, I don't think I want to go with y'all. Like, you're weird. Because that conversation was so awkward.
Oh,
it was great.
That's the thing, is it was like, it was the best kind of awkward, because it wasn't, I was so worried it'd be like, and to a certain degree, you know, it's in the back of your mind. It's like, okay, this is a character we need to kind of have come with us. You know, we're playing a game, but it was kind of like, just because they spring, it's like, I don't really like you guys all that much. You're all kind of weird and stupid, and you're clearly illiterate. Mm-hmm. It was great to have you spring someone from jail and then have them insult you. It's an interesting experience, I think.
I think the best part of it was Kyle kind of stumbled his way through that and was like, I don't know, I'm just really good with words. And I was like, really?
Are you sure about that, buddy?
You were very convincing on getting him to come with you, because you are great with words.
Yeah.
But it was great.
And there's a lot of great banter that happens, I think, in episode 3 and 4, where, I mean, Mike, you can tell, has had this pent up urge to play a character all this time. And it's like, man, you are killing it right now. Like,
I'm really looking forward to hearing that.
Yeah, it's great.
So, how much of the campaign do you already have planned out? Like, are you letting them kind of figure it out as you go, or be like, okay, we got to get here?
You know, I think my DMing style is a lot more of free roam. Kind of give people an open sandbox and let them root around in it. Mm-hmm. And I'm realizing, you know, even little indecisions and stuff like that, there's a lot of that I have to kind of cut out, just because, you know, you don't learn all that much from it. And it's mostly the characters just asking questions, and it kind of slows down the whole pace. So I think I'm going to intend to push a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But definitely, you know, when you finish the second episode, there's a very clear kind of arc that's going to be happening. And I want people, or I want the players, to have that in the back of their minds, kind of pushing them on to do stuff. And so far, there's a little bit of a sense of urgency, which I like. But I also want them to have time to kind of find NPCs that they really like and do fun stuff. And, you know, I want them to be able to explore the world, because I'm really proud of some of the areas and a lot of the detail. And and I love PCs asking questions, you know. it's going to be striking that balance, mm-hmm. I think, of go, 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 and then also getting the little flavor here and there. Because I definitely don't want to railroad stuff.
Sure.
And just be like, you're playing my adventure. So.
No, you have to go here.
Yeah. And especially with like a more morally ambiguous characters, and party all together, I think you can't just trust them to do the right thing, because sometimes they're just going to want to stab that person and cover it up. It's like, all right, that's fair. Mm-hmm. I can't stop you.
Cool. So what's been your favorite part of Volume 2 so far?
I'm really happy with all of the characters. Mm-hmm. I think each one has some pretty unique stuff to them that I'm excited to kind of come out and focus on. That's one of Mike's like strong points as a DM in season one, I think, is every character really had a profound effect and presence in the world. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to capture that a little bit more, because it's not something I necessarily focused on. It's more things people kind of stumbled into. But I want to focus on kind of having them be these kind of heroic figures and kind of lead them into that kind of, very Han Solo-esque, where you kind of just start off as a smuggler and then you found this thing and then you're like, all right, I guess we're the good guys. Let's roll with it.
Might as well. I guess that's where we landed today.
Exactly. Had we not picked up them Jedi, we wouldn't have... So I think that's the characters is the most exciting part for me. And then, you know, I'm excited for, you know, them to explore the world. I hope there's some interesting stuff there for them to pick up and it not just to be, you know, hours of my time just for me to feel self-satisfied. So
no, you really need to check out that door over there. Tell me what you think about that door.
Yeah, let me describe the intricate runes and craftsmanship for 5 minutes. It's a very important door.
Oh, yes, please. Everybody wants that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, are you going to try and one-up Mike on this volume?
You know, I'm I'm trying to be as little competitive as possible.
Oh, come
because
on now.
I think Mike has a lot of really strong points in his DMing style that are very counterpoint to mine. It was actually a big worry for me taking over was I was worried that the fans of his DMing were not really going to be a fan of mine.
That's understandable. So,
yeah, so I hope people see, you know, the strong points of my DMing, I hope. And then I want, there are a few things I've done to really try to capture or you know, I'm trying to capture strong points of his DMing as well, you know, with focus on character background and things like that. You know, I had a chance to borrow his second edition books, and I'm hoping, or I went through and I tried to find a bunch of second edition rules that I could implement because that was part of his first thing. His first campaign was second edition kind of flair. Mm-hmm. And I found like a morale system where you would roll and you could run away. And I thought that was a little extreme, but now they have a morale system where when they roll nat 20s, they get extra dice in this kind of morale pool to inspire their allies and vice versa. If they roll ones, it inspires the enemies. So it's that little edge in combat to kind of change the flow and give it some extra flavor. So nice. I worked hard to try to implement some of that second edition, you know, flair into the new volume. So
with that, did you go through and homebrew some of that, or are you taking it like directly from second edition?
We were using the non-weapon proficiencies, but I went through and tried to, really kind of make it, very apparent, you know, telling them what certain things would give them bonuses.
Sure.
You know, I think in the third episode, there's a time when Nicodemus uses ancient history a lot. He has a non-weapon proficiency in ancient history. So not only does he get his bonus for history, you know, it's specifically that extra step. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's rope use and animal rendering and all kinds of fun stuff like that. That's pretty much straight from second edition, you know, but using the proficiency system as opposed to the kind of plus minus system in 2E. Mm-hmm. And then the morale system, which is, I didn't want it to overtake Bardic Inspiration, even though nobody's playing a bard. I thought it would kind of cheapen it to just have it be equivalent. Mm-hmm. So it's like a D4 right now. And then I think I put it every 4 or 5 levels that they level up, the die increases.
Okay.
So I kept it kind of always one die level below a Bardic Inspiration. And then obviously like the Bardic Inspiration, you get more kind of use out of it later in the levels as well. You know, you can use it for damage or different bonuses and stuff. Whereas this is just straight D20 rolls. So, you know, it's just a little bit of extra flavor. And also, I'm kind of a big fan of, some people are really hardline about kind of like missing and things like that. I find it's never really, nobody's excited to have been one off from missing an attack. Nobody's like, oh man, that was really close. It's just like, well, you know, that was disappointing. So I think all the other chances to have both sides hitting each other just makes things more exciting. You know, they're flubbed hits are, you know, nat ones and stuff like that can really be exciting in certain scenarios, but the casual, I get, especially low levels, I get one attack and I miss it. Well, that was my turn. Mm-hmm. You know, giving the players every chance to kind of hit their stuff. And when you have a resource that you're using, it makes it still feel kind of intense. So those are definitely things I'm focusing on.
Sure. Are you starting everyone out at level one? Speaking of character level there and having one attack.
Yeah. You know, it was a big decision talking with them because it's like, you know, I'm thinking that a lot of the people who are listening are already listeners. So it's like to go from level 19 and 20 back down to level one would just be, it's like, oh, you guys are fighting one wolf. How exciting. So I thought level three was kind of a good balance of, you know, they're learning new stuff. Mm-hmm. Christina is playing a new archetype that I designed. I homebrewed the Dragoon archetype for the fighter.
Nice.
So I didn't want to have them just jump in with 2 feet and, you know, have all these things. You know, Kyle's never played a spellcaster class, really. Well, he was Ranger, but he didn't use spells a whole lot. You know, Paladin's a little bit more involved, I think. Or at least he's using them
more.
You're
going to do more than Hunter's Mark with the
exactly.
Paladin, so.
so giving them some time to adjust to that, but I do plan kind of every, you know, maybe two recording sessions. So every 5 to 6 episodes, having them just level up. So it's a pretty steady progression, you know, cause once you get into like the 5 through 10 range, you know, the levels kind of steamroll.
Yeah.
So I think that'll give it some good pacing. And, you know, there's also, if you start them too strong and you start them going through villages, nothing really stops them from, I could kill every person in this village. Uh-huh. So you have to keep a little bit of stuff while you're starting out.
Especially if they've got that that shifty moral compass.
Exactly. Yeah. You need to, I have a few things I need to establish before they go on rampant killing. So
very nice. Well, are there any other details you want to give us? Anything else you want to put out there to let people know? Tune in, anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of the players and the cast that we have. Christina's new to the game, but she's played in a lot of stuff that I've done, and she's doing great. So I'm you know, tune in and see the cast go through this new world. I'm really proud of the world that me and my friend have built. You know, you've got, you know, this interesting Northland that in the winter months, the Shadowfell kind of rises up and takes over. And, you know, people have to kind of hide in these mountain holds and fend this stuff off. There's going to be areas in that. There's a lot of Warhammer inspired stuff. That's a big part of my background, and a lot of other kind of fantasy stuff kind of being influenced. So I think there's going to be a lot of details and a lot of cool world building for people to tune into.
Nice. I am a Murder Dice fan. I have loved the show. I am definitely interested in seeing how this volume goes, especially since you just said that Warhammer influences a lot, because we did an interview not that long ago about the Warhammer RPG, and I was like, I need to do that. That sounds interesting.
Only because we played D&D first did we not play a Warhammer role-playing game, you know, this time around. That's how I got my whole RPG start. So
nice.
You know, it's a grim, dark future and past there. So there's gonna be a lot of cool elements, I think, from that.
Awesome. I am really excited to see how this goes and where it goes. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you, ask you about the things that you've homebrewed, because it sounds like you've got a ton of cool homebrew stuff that's going to go down in here. How can they get a hold of you? How can they get the show? Things like that.
Yeah, so we're pretty much on everything, Stitcher, Google Play, iTunes, we're on Spotify as well. Best way to get in touch with me is Twitter. It's the only social media I have that's dedicated to it. So when I see that, I kind of give some preference. You know, I want to respond to people and have cool chats with them. You know, we have a Patreon up. There's a lot of support there. We can't thank the people who go there enough. You know, just being able to pay for the hosting and stuff. So we're not paying out of pocket anymore is pretty fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, and then We haven't done it yet. You know, we have a website up, murderdice.com. I intend to post some more stuff once I get the world map totally finished how I want it. I'll put that up there. If people ask for it, I can put the Dragoon archetype up there, all kinds of stuff. So, you know, people kind of just have to text me and remind me that they're interested. Otherwise, I'm just kind of sitting alone working on Dungeons and Dragons stuff.
I mean, you know, that it happens.
Yeah.
All right. So, and your handle on Twitter is at Murder Dice Ben, correct?
Yeah, it's at Murder Dice Ben on Twitter. Hit me up, private message me, you know, follow me, what have you. Yeah, I like talking to people about Dungeons and Dragons and all kinds of stuff. So, if you just want to have a chat, I'll talk with you.
Very nice. Awesome. Well, Ben, we really, really appreciate it. Thanks for giving up some of your night to come on here and chat with us about Volume 2. And best of luck with it. I'm super excited.
Yeah, thanks so much. I really appreciate you reaching out, and this was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
If you would like to interact with us, you can find us on Twitter at @mage_podcast or check out our website, mageproductions.com.
Or if you just want to tell other people how much you love the show and that they should listen, you can leave us a 5-star review, go and review us wherever you get your podcast from. We really love to see those and read what you think.
And we would like to give a huge shout out to our partners and sponsors. First off, Hit Dice. Check them out at hitdicepod.com and on Twitter at hitdicepod.
Also, Kraken Dice. If you're looking for some awesome new dice, you don't have to look any further. Just go check them out, krakendice.com. You can also follow them on Twitter at Kraken Dice. And then when you find your dice that you have to have, use the code MAGE. And get yourself 10% off, because who doesn't like 10% off?
And of course, last but not least, SoNerdWear.com, a place to find fun clothing and accessories tailored for tabletop geeks and nerds everywhere. They're also on Twitter at SoNerdWear. They've really stepped up the entire game for us. They now host all of our swag, so you can get t-shirts, stickers, mugs, cups. So you can go to SoNerdWear.com and search for Mage Productions to find all of our cool swag. And then once you find everything, and you can use code MAGE to get 10% off your entire order. Anything else?
I don't know. I think we actually got it all that time.
It helps when you write things down.
It does.
Thanks, Joe.
You're welcome.